and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org. This is Rosie Starr for Radio Catskill. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Keith Hubbard has a Star Talk report that says our daytime star, the sun, makes the best timekeeper. Mark Gidley, arborist living in Hankins, New York, visits with Stephanie Phillips. In the segment Now You Know, you'll hear practical information about successfully planting your trees on your property. All of that coming up on today's Farm and Country, here on Radio Catskill. But first, news headlines.
Well, Tim, it must be Saturday morning because Farm and Country just got started.
Yes, it is our beacon of Saturday. We know that it's time to get out there and get going, or maybe just have another cup of coffee for some.
Right, right.
But for some, today, while you're having that second cup of coffee, do you see what I'm doing now?
Yes.
Go to your phone and call 845-482-4141. It's our spring fund drive. We are raising money to support shows like Farm and Country, and like the other locally produced shows that you get to hear on Saturdays. We've got such a great lineup. Farm and Country, Catskill Character, Janice Adams Show, Josh Fox, which is going to be a special live version
today at 1.
We're
going to have him on at 1.
Oh, yeah. You want to tune in for that. I think we're talking about the Skinner's Falls Bridge too. Yeah. So a hot topic. So that's what we do. We bring you the community news and information and different perspectives. Farm and Country, all about rural life and how to plant a tree. I don't know how to plant a tree, but Stephanie Phillips is going to tell me. I'm going to learn. And because I appreciate that, I'm going to go to the website and donate at wjffradio.org. Come on, follow me. You can do it too.
And you can also call, and you should call, at 845-482-4141. Fun drive, spring fun drive started Thursday night.
Yep.
Ramble Tamble came out of the gate. Great showing of response. That continued yesterday for the first full day of the fun drive. People were calling and supporting us. Honestly, so far today, we have not heard from that many people.
No, the phone hasn't rung. Yeah.
We have a heck of a lineup on Saturday, and this is one of those times where we really need people to let us know that they're listening. Also, we've got this $40,000 goal.
Yep.
And so we have to make a certain amount every day, and now's the time to start making that amount.
Let's
today.
Make it.
Call
yeah.
us now, 845-482-4141. Tim's here. I'm here.
Yeah.
One of us will answer the phone. 845-482-4141, or make your contribution online.
Maybe you're a first-time listener, or maybe you think you've donated in the past. I said this before. You know, some people think, oh, I've already done that. Well, maybe if it wasn't recently, it could have been over a year ago. And, you know, we rely on these funds every year, and so we need your support. WJFFradio.org or call 845-482-4141 to keep us going and to keep these great shows going and to keep us, you know, honestly, keep us able to fulfill our mission. We have a mission to connect the community and engage the community and present these diverse voices so that we can, fulfill that mission. We need that help from you guys. So call 845-482-4141. We're listener supported, and we need your support now.
We're going right back on into Farm and Country. As we do, remember the number. Use it. Call us. Help us out right now. Give what you can at 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141.
Comes from Van Gorder's Furniture, featuring Lodge and Adirondack styles, as well as rustic collections. With showrooms at Lake Wallenpaupack, downtown Honesdale, and Milford, PA, Van Gorder's Furniture brings the outdoors inside. VanGorders.com.
This is Rosie Starr. Welcome back to Farm and Country. Coming up, we have Mark Gidley, arborist from Hankins, New York, who speaks with Stephanie Phillips. In the segment Now You Know, you'll hear about successfully planting your trees on your property. First up is Keith Hubbard with a Star Talk report about our daytime star, the sun, which makes the best timekeeper.
Thank you. Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Rather than talk about the stars in our night sky this week, I'm going to talk about the one star we can see in our day sky. Our sun has been used for thousands of years to tell time. The sundial is the oldest known device used for keeping time. The earliest known sundial still preserved dates from the 8th century BC. A sundial tells time by the shadow of an object cast by the sun. The length of day, as told by successive returns of the sun at midday, is slightly less than 24 hours, which means that the time as told by a sundial will be slightly off the time as told by a clock. But four times a year, the time as told by a sundial and a clock will agree, and one of those days will be on or near Thursday. When the sun reaches its highest point in the sky at that time, a sundial will read noon and a clock will read 1 p.m. because we are now on daylight saving time, after springing forward 1 hour last month. Afterward, noon by a sundial will come slightly earlier than noon by a clock every day until mid-May, when noon by a sundial will come 4 minutes earlier than noon by a clock. The other three instances when time by a sundial and by a clock will agree are on or near June 15th, September 1st, and December 25th. Enjoy this unique day when time by a sundial and time by a clock agree. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Good morning, listeners. This is Stephanie Phillips with Now You Know for Farm and Country. Today we're going to find out how to plant trees so that they grow successfully in our yards. Our expert is Mark Gidley, arborist from Hankins, New York. He's been planting trees in our area for 32 years, so he knows what he's talking about.
When I first started out and I studied at the botanical gardens, one thing I did not do was tree planting.
But you certainly learned. Mark, how do you prepare the spot where you're going to put your tree in?
Okay, so the old saying is a 10-gallon hole for a 2-pint plant. Basically, what you're doing is you're digging a hole that's that much bigger than the plant you're putting in that's in that pot or in the ball and burlap in the cage. That's going to allow for all the young fibrous feeder roots to work their way out with having to not struggle through rocks and hardwood and maybe some type of a clay soil. If there is a clay-type soil structure there, then I'll add some gypsum to break down the clay structure, because there's nothing worse than putting in something that you really like, the customer really likes, only to see it sit and get root rot because it's sitting in a pool. Once its feet are wet for a certain amount of time, they're going to rot out. It will no longer be able to feed, and then you lose the tree.
It sounds like you need a backhoe to put those trees in.
Well, we've used backhoes with some trees. We put in several white pines, I think 25 white pines that are about 14 feet tall for a local customer. And as opposed to digging individual holes, we dug one huge area and then placed everything, took off the burlap, and then just backfilled with the soil. I think out of the 20 or 25 trees, there was one that died back, but that was probably because that one was close to the road, and white pines are not really salt tolerant. So in the winter months, there's a lot of salt and so on. Yeah.
Can you go through the steps that you would follow in planting a tree?
Absolutely. I'm going back to the very beginning. First, I'm going to source the trees, so I need to know that my supplier has good stock. We're somewhat limited up here, but very fortunately, Agway have been great in helping me out. In fact, every year that goes by, they've had a little more, if I can use the term exotic, just some really nice ornamental trees that they've been bringing in. And I can spend time there just like a kid at the zoo. I can spend a lot of time walking around up there and looking at the different trees, especially when they're close to flowering. Although usually by that time, most have been snapped up. So first I'll source the tree. At this stage, I can usually call someone there and say, can you find me something nice? And then they'll tag it for me, wrap it up, and then it's ready to go for when I come over there to collect it. So locating a spot is paramount. You don't want to be putting something way down in the dip where you know there's going to be a problem if you're having ongoing wet seasons through summer, and especially the last couple of years, which have been like that. That's okay if you're putting in the willow. In fact, that would be strategic. If you have a spot that was dry but sitting down in a dip and you want to dry it out, and red maples are really good for drawing in. Red maples. Red maples and silver maples too. So getting back to locating, planting, etc. The red maple is great for if it's a slightly wet area. It can't be waterlogged. If something is waterlogged, quite often, even if a willow won't take it. And the other thing with the red maple, just going back there for a second, is they're really great for cleaning the air. So if you buy a property and you want to have some surrounding trees and there's nothing really there, then one of my things would be to put in some red maples. Just as a base tree that's nice to look at in the fall time and will grow at a reasonable rate and should be fairly resistant of different types of bugs, blights, and diseases. So we've got our spot that's going to be, let's suppose we're on nice level land. We're going to dig that 5-gallon hole for the 2-pint plant. If it's clay, we're going to add our gypsum, turn the soil in. I like to use leaf mold. So if you have a pile of leaves that you've been dumping for several years in the fall time, once you get all your leaves together, you may have a nice collection of those. I'll take the very bottom of that compost. I'll turn that in with the soil. And there's also something called green sand.
I don't know about
that. Green sand is really beneficial with growing. It's not cheap, but it's worthwhile, and it helps really get things moving along. And then there's also something called mycorrhizae. Mycorrhizae is a good fungus, and that will help promote a lot of the new root growth as well. Mix everything together, backfill. I'm very big into leaving, and a lot of people are not leaving the cages on. So you've got your ball and burlap in your cage. Bend down the top of the cage or use some bolt cutters and take the top loops off.
By the cage, you're talking about the burlap?
Yeah, quite often it's balled and burlapped, but then there's a cage with the larger trees that goes around it, a metal cage.
Oh.
So I'm an advocate for leaving those cages on, and the reason being, you can cut some of those cages back with bolt cutters. The roots will find their way over time, and they would have rusted out completely by the time those roots are sizable. Slice the burlap off as much as you can. One of the reasons that I like to leave the cage on is if you take the cage off, let's suppose you have a 15-foot tree, 12 to 15-foot tree, 12 to 14-foot. Once you remove that cage, everything becomes loose and breaks away. I actually was brought up in the UK, and they used to have these little children's toys called Weebles. And they used to say, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Okay, I don't know if you had them in
the
States.
Yes, we had them.
Okay, so that's my view on leaving the cage with the bald and burlap and cage tree, is that helps keep ballast. The second you take that cage off and all the soil falls away, you just will have a bare root tree. And if you've got a 14-foot bare root tree, then you're going to have to guy it with all kinds of cables and so on and so forth, and who knows how long you're going to have to guy it for, so that the wind doesn't cause it to fall over, and it's going to be nice and straight. A lot of people have success with bare root. I think that in terms of shipping, bare root makes things a lot easier because you're not dealing with that weight. In fact, I think it's something that's like 20 times less weight if you're bare root than with ball and burlap. But my preference is to have that bald and burlap have the roots nice and moist still in the soil, so the second you plant that tree, it's ready to go.
Then you got to fill the hole.
Correct. So then you're going to backfill. When you're backfilling, make sure that the soil level does not come up any further on the trunk than when it did where it came out of the nursery. Because if you bring that soil level up on the trunk, it's going to cause that part of that trunk to rot. Not always, but quite often it will, and it's usually a fairly slow process. But the tree will suffer and eventually will probably die. Very few actually adapt to that. So grading that up, not a good thing. Or if you have existing trees, bringing up the soil grade above the trunk, not a good thing. So now we've planted our tree. I put in what's called a well. And I'll take soil, because we've taken out a certain amount of soil, and we put in our new tree. So there's usually a certain amount of soil left over unless we've pulled out mostly rock. Then I'm going to build what's called a well, or a saucer, some people call them, a circle around that tree that you can take a pail of a couple of gallons of water and dump it in, and usually that just disappears, goes straight down. Then you put in another couple of gallons, and that's going to slowly go down. And then, if necessary, put in another 1 or 2 gallons. So between 4 and 6 gallons for a tree of that size, I would say maybe a little more. Now, the one advantage with that saucer is it makes life so much easier, especially if you've got more than one tree. If you didn't have that saucer there, unless you've got an irrigation system set up to come on at a certain time every day and water those trees, by being able to put your bucket of water in that saucer, you just walk around, 1, 2, 3, 4, and walk away and it's done. And that saucer can be invisible underneath your mulch layer too, so no one really sees it. And again, with your mulch, if you can, come out as far as you can up to the drip line. But with the mulch, don't come up on the trunk level either. Mm-hmm. And make sure that that mulch is aged, either bought in bags or aged wood chips, 6 months or more, having seasoned in the summer months.
Do you have to remove that mulch in the spring?
Not at all. Leave the mulch there permanently. The mulch will feed the trees. As it breaks down, that bottom layer of mulch will break down and feed the trees. Just top it up every 2 to 3 years. And you can change it. There's no harm. If you're putting in a cedar mulch 1 year, you can put in pine bark mini nuggets the next year. But my personal preference is for something that breaks down. I think that those pine bark mini nuggets will break down, but they take quite a bit longer. So you might want to put something on the underside that's going to feed for the first couple of years, and then something that's more attractive on top. You know, to each their own.
That's what I do with all my leaves that I'm raking right now. Do you prune the tree back when you plant it?
If there are broken branches during transport, then I will have to cut them back. Sometimes if there's something really extreme of a branch rubbing or growing back towards the trunk, I'll take that out. But usually if I'm choosing a tree, I'm going to choose something that doesn't have that structure to it. Or if I'm having someone at the nursery choose it for me, they're going to choose a tree that doesn't have that anyway.
There's a lot of things in the gardening books about the ratio between the amount of branches and the amount of root system. So some of them seem to advocate just pruning back anyway.
Absolutely. What I'm going to do from the get-go is I'm going to put that tree in. If there's something broken, I'm going to cut it back. If there's something rubbing on another branch, I'm going to cut it back. Next to that, I'm going to leave it. And I'm going to let it do its thing and benefit from the photosynthesis. Now, the next winter, when everything is dormant, then I'm going to come back and take a look and look at doing some serious pruning. But up until that tree has been in the ground 2 to 4 years, am I really going to start doing it? You know, and if you keep on it a little bit every year, you shouldn't have any problems at all. In terms of a balance between the upper foliage and the roots, I think that Mother Nature has a tendency to do its thing. And if there's too much going on, you're going to get a little bit of die back up top. But usually, I haven't seen anything out of the blue. And with an evergreen, you're not going to prune it the same way as a deciduous tree.
Right.
At all. Right? If you go to the West Coast, it's a whole different ballgame because you've got pom-pom trees.
I was just
going to
say, there are those people who like their pom-poms.
And I have seen that, and I have, shame on me, done that.
When you're planting, what kind of fertilizer do you use, if any?
We spoke about the mycorrhizae, which is a natural type of fungus that will promote root growth. We spoke about the green sand, and we spoke about taking some leaf mold from old leaves that you've raked up in the fall time. Maybe you've got a compost. Mix all of this together. A little bit of peat moss, but be careful with peat moss because some people will just dump it right into the bottom of the hole, mix some water in with it, and then they'll put their soil in. You've really got to mix everything together. Take everything and mix it really, really well together and then put it in. And I wouldn't use more than about 20% peat moss in relation to the rest of the soils, etc., that you've got going into that hole.
How far from the house should you plan on planting your trees?
It depends on what type of tree you've got. Sometimes you can cheat a little bit, which might not be fair to the tree. You could put a tree in that you know is going to grow to a fairly large size and say, okay, a branch is growing towards the house here, but I'm not going to worry, I'll just keep cutting it back and let all the other branches remain. In terms of being nice to yourself but a little unfair to the tree, that's one way of doing it. The slower the tree, then quite often the closer in, if I'm able to do it, I will plant the tree to the house or the deck. And obviously the bigger and the faster the tree, then the further away I'm going to plant it. And the same thing with spacing. If you want instant coverage with the green giant arborvitae, a natural barrier, then you're going to plant them a foot away. But now, 2 years on at my house, these trees are really crowded on each other, and they might cause one to die back a little bit, or both to die back. So then you've got to get on them and constantly prune them back. You could do that and get your instant screening. My preference is to bridge the gap and not go, let's say, 2 feet away, but go 3 feet away as opposed to 4 feet and wait a little bit longer. So I don't mind waiting a couple of years before they fill in completely. In the winter months, which is a good time for pruning, I'll come in. And what I'm calling a winter is between, let's say, the middle of November and maybe the middle of April. It depends on what kind of a winter we're having, because they've been so different for the last 2 or 3 years. And then I'll just prune them back and let them do their thing, and then they'll grow in again, a bit like your regular haircut.
Right. Are there different considerations for planting a specimen tree that's going to stand alone?
So if I'm putting in a specimen tree, let's take the Stewartia pseudocamellia, I would put the tree in, and then I'd put some type of a mulch circle around it, which would help keep weed whackers and lawnmowers away from clipping the trunk. And at the same time, the mulch highlights that area, so aesthetically, there's a plus to it. But beyond that, as the mulch starts to break down to base form, then it's going to feed the tree. Ideally, you're supposed to come out to the drip line of the tree. Now, the drip line is considered, if you had it raining, where there'd be that circle of water that hits the ground around the tree. That's what they call the drip line. If I have the room in my yard and I really want to highlight that tree and do the 100% right thing, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring that mulch circle right out to the drip line of the tree. Ordinarily, when I'm planting, I don't do a mulch circle that large because it just takes too much of the yard up. And if I'm putting in a few trees, I'm really taking away from a lot of lawn. So I might only come out 3 feet, let's say. Sometimes I'll come out a little bit more on a smaller tree and give it time. So as it grows larger, it's something there for it to feed from. And then basically top up that mulch every 2 or 3 years. Then as that mulch breaks down below it, it feeds the trees. And different types of mulch. Some people use these shredded rubber tires that have got a dye in them. Personally, that's not my choice. I like to use cedar because it does last a while. And not only that, but it has a tendency to keep a lot of the insects away. Like a cedar closet, if one of the reasons for that is to keep the bugs out. Moths, I guess. And the other thing with mulch is be wary. If you have several trees taken down and chipped up, quite often the customers will say, oh, can you put those chips around the foundation shrubs or around these new trees? If that tree that was taken down and chipped is a live tree, then all the chips that you place around the tree or the bush, they're considered live chips from the living tree, and they'll draw nutrients out of the soil as opposed to add nutrients to the soil. So your best bet, the live tree is taken down, chipped up, get those chips put in a pile out of the way for a while, give them 6 months or so, especially if it's in the summer, because summertime is going to cause them to break down at a faster rate. Then once you've given them 6 months and they're starting to break down, then apply them as a mulch, and they will add to your soil as the breakdown process is happening to those chips.
What time of year would be the best time to plant?
I prefer to plant in the springtime. Everyone's come through the winter and they're looking forward to the springtime. That's when I'm finding there's a great supply of trees. Planting in the fall is okay as well. The only thing I find in the fall time is that the supply is not the same. Although quite often you can get a lot of trees on sale.
Yes.
Anywhere up to 50%. If they want it done in the fall, it's not a problem either.
And then during the first year, what steps do you have to take to nurture the tree and make sure it does well? Do you have to fertilize?
Okay, if a tree looks to be doing well, I tend to let them be. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of a thing. But having said that, in terms of fertilizing, coming back to the recent changes in weather that we've had, these wet, hot summers that have been conducive to a lot of fungus. In the past, we used to take these little tree spikes that you put in around the drip line. These tree spikes, you drive into the ground, and they break down. They're called slow feed, and they'll feed the tree over 2 to 3 months. If I'm planting a tree that's on a slope, I only use them on the upside of the slope because everything runs down. And my belief is that if you put them on the downhill side of the slope, the tree is not benefiting from them. The thing with a lot of these tree spikes, these organic tree feeding spikes, is they have a lot of nitrogen, which ordinarily is really beneficial for trees. But the drawback with nitrogen is nitrogen and fungus are best buddies. Mm-hmm. So you put those in and you've had 2 years of a really bad fungus, you're asking for big trouble. And it's like putting gasoline on a fire. So what you need is low impact nitrogen in order to maintain a healthy tree and try and drift away from that fungus.
When do you fertilize your trees?
The springtime. That for me is the best time. The reason being, that is when everything is starting to move along. The sap is uptaking and starting to move along. The foliage is coming out. So my belief is springtime is best.
Mark, are you willing to answer questions from homeowners? And if so, how can they contact you?
Absolutely. You can contact me online at treeusa@yahoo.com.
So now you know how to plant your trees so they get off to a good start. Our tree expert today has been Mark Gidley from Hankins, New York. If there are other topics you'd like to know about, email me at stephanie@wjffradio.org. That's STEPHANIE at wjffradio.org. This is Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
Hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by WJFF Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and Stephanie Phillips. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening to Farm and Country on WJFF Radio Catskill. Feel free to visit our webpage, wjffradio.org. There you'll find podcasts for our local news and resource information for our community. And if you're so inspired, we'd love you to click that donate button to show your support for the station you've come to rely on, WJFF Radio Catskill. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
Here we are. It's Saturday morning. It's still technically Saturday morning.
Still, we got a half hour left.
Midday, yeah. And it's spring fun drive day number two, full day number two and a half, whatever. And we need to hear from you. 845-482-4141. Give what you can to help us out here during our fun drive. And I think we did hear from one person since we last spoke.
That was my dad.
Okay. You didn't have to tell people that.
Well, I want to thank Dad. Dad down in Florida donated. Appreciate it, Dad. Thanks for listening.
It's a good thing that you told people then.
Yeah, so maybe you get your dad or mom, if you're listening, to donate. Have them. My dad donated online, which is a good, that is a step in the right direction for him. So go to online, wjffradio.org, or donate by calling us at 845-482-4141. We've got something special coming up next. It's Catskill Character, but it's a live version. We are live with Catskill Character. I think Donna Fellenberg is on the phone now.
She's right there.
Yes, I am.
She is. I don't have my headphones on, so I can't hear you
because
I
can't hear Donna.
I took the headphones off, Donna, so I can just race to the phone quickly.
I'm here.
Good morning.
Well, how are you doing today, Donna?
I'm great, and I'm so happy to be able to do this show to really highlight you, Jason Dole, winner of the River Reporter Best Radio Personality of 2020.
This is the special thing, Jason. You are the Catskill character this morning.
Yes.
Surprise.
Yes. Yes.
Jason is like the quintessential Catskill character, I have to say, because you were born and raised in Roscoe, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I wasn't born there, but that's where I grew up. But basically, uh-huh. spent my whole life in Sullivan County.
Donna's going right in.
Yeah, we're going right into it.
I'm taking a deep dive here into the life of J.